What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sport Medicine Broadcast, FLSA, and the Athletic Trainer. We're talking about the Fair Labor Standards Act with Dr. Adam Thompson, who is a director of AT Education at Indiana Wesleyan University. He's been in the profession about 20 years. He's also a geocacher, if you look on his Twitter bio, and a big fan of the Beastie Boys, so check him out there. So geocaching is a real fun hobby, and again, whenever you come down to Houston, if you come to NATA, I'll show you where one is. It's right by the convention center, and then, like I said, you can help me find one. I've looked for it 3 times already and can't find it, but it's there. I just have to keep looking. All right, so with me today is...
Kevin.
Jaylene.
Liz.
Benjamin.
And of course, I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. Also joining us is Sean Reedy, spelled ready, but pronounced Reedy, at Rice University. So somebody's got... Is that us?
Yeah.
Oh, freaking awesome. Awesome. We have a fire alarm going off at the school. So isn't that just super convenient? All right. So here's what we're going to try and do. I'm going to turn all of our mics off, and then I'm going to let you two guys just talk, and I'm going to see if that works.
Okay, that sounds good with me.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Adam, I guess start off on what is the FLSA?
Well, essentially, it is a rules test that the government put in place years ago of certain thresholds that employees have to make to be exempt from overtime. If they cross that threshold of weekly salaries, then you couldn't charge, or you couldn't have them collect overtime. So you could salary somebody at a certain threshold and work them as many hours as the job would require. And so that's something that we've kind of had for a long time, and it's definitely something that needed to be updated. The last time it was updated, it was quite George W. And then obviously Obama looked at it recently and said, okay, it's been 12 years. We need to look at this again. I teach a sports law class, and so I became aware of this kind of push to update this law about 2 years ago. And so I started watching it a little bit more and more and just realizing the implications it had for athletic trainers. I said, this is absolutely going to impact us, because you look at a profession that I would argue is underpaid and overworked. And so I saw where this could absolutely be a catalyst for a lot of athletic trainers' jobs to be looked at and reconsidered, reclassified, so they actually would either, one, be paid for what they love to do, or two, look at, hey, you need help. We need to reorganize this position and give you a little bit more support.
How did so basically this has been something that's going on for a couple of years.
Absolutely.
And obviously there was an older version of this. How was that older version approached, and how was it brought on?
It was something where I believe I have it within the document as well, but it was something that they saw there were big inconsistencies with how current the law was. The first time it was updated was 76. And then in 2004. So when you're looking at that kind of differential of an update of a law, the inflation rate and the cost of living rate far outpaced the actual law being updated. So that was a major problem. And obviously going either from 10-year threshold. Well, we all know that since 2008, our economy has changed dramatically. And so for this law to still be kind of status quo was not appropriate. It's something so that Congress looked at it and said, we got to update this. The current threshold that just was voted to change, $5 a week or $23.6 a year. So when you talk about poverty levels around the country in certain states, $23.6 is not that far above some poverty levels in some of these states. I mean, some people's poverty level in their state is $15,000 a year. About a learned professional that has a degree, has a license, a national board certification, and they were thresholding them at 24, 25 grand a year and working them 80 hours a week, scratching their heads saying, why am I paying for school and doing all these things to be potentially classified in a pretty low salary? So they looked at the law and said, we need to change this. We need to update it, and we need to get it up to a more appropriate standard for the current cost of living.
So basically that is one of those directions where, and I know a lot of us have asked this, and we've all sat back and we've all been on NATA's website and the Career Center, and we've all sat there and said, how is this Division I university, whatever that it might be, this higher end Division I institution, asking for a certified athletic trainer with a master's degree, multiple years experience, 2 to 3 years experience, and paying $28,000 a year? That's kind of where this falls into that window and why that is legal.
Yeah, because with paying them the 28 grand a year absolutely met the prior standard, and they could get a full-time licensed certified employee with experience, with advanced degrees, and still meet the law. And we most people would probably agree that the expectations at that level and overwork, that in most like professions would be acceptable. But largely, that's what the kind of the trap we've fallen into with that. So, yeah, I think that that's exactly where the job you just described, that's where that's been legal or fair.
So how has that, I guess, how is that now of that new effect and that new law? And you said that over the last couple of years, it has been ongoing and it is coming and it's coming. When did it actually change, and when did that effect stating that we are now going into a newer version of that FLSA?
Okay. Originally in March of 2014, President Obama came out and he asked the Department of Labor to look at this law and to see if potentially there was a way they could modernize the law for our current economy. The Department of Labor looked at it. They made some suggestions and they were supposed to propose the changes in November of 2014. But that deadline came and went. And you could argue it came and went because of the big congressional shift that November. Because there was, whenever it's an election year, that really changes things. But the election came, they postponed it. And so they kept looking at how can we update that? When you look at the old standard of being $455 a week, $455 a week, and about $23,660 a year for a 12-month contract, they started proposing things that were more than double that, of going well over $1,000 a week, which would put a 12-month contract anywhere from $56,000, $57,000 a year. And the other thing they threw in there was, we're not going to let this law become dated like it has been. We're going to go ahead and make this every 3 years we have to update the law again. Good change or caveat to the law that it doesn't sit for another decade for multiple presidents. It actually gets a little bit of a fair look every few years. So then they started to kind of settle on something over $900 a week, which comes out to over $47,000 a year. As long as they met that threshold, exempt from collecting overtime. And so that proposed update to the 900 plus a week and 47 grand plus a year, that only put the law at the 40th percentile of weekly earnings for all full-time salaried workers across the United States. So even with the update style, complaining that it's too much. And I was like, you're not even at a 50% threshold, a pushback on it. So they proposed the rule change in July of 2015. Whenever you do that at the federal level, you have 60 days to comment on that law proposal change. When they did this in 2004 under President W. Bush, there were about almost 300,000 comments made. And this, it basically tripled that when they proposed this. People were up in arms. They were furious because the law is proposing that you're now doubling that threshold to meet so that you wouldn't have to pay someone overtime. And you asked about the drop dead. The final rule was made this past May. May 18th of 2016, they settled on $913 a week was the required minimum, which came out to, for a 12-month contract, $476 a year, depending on what the possibilities are. So that was really where that came in, and the implementation deadline, November 1st of this year.
So now, does that also affect, like you said earlier, will that go into and be possibly changed every 3 years as well? Or is that outside of that window now?
That the implementation deadline, that there would probably be discussions every 3 years from that implementation deadline. Absolutely.
Okay. So I guess then when you go into those and when you start going into talking about the FLSA and how it affects, especially us as athletic trainers, there are some exemptions that kick in, correct?
Absolutely. There's a rules test or a duties test that they go through, basically where you have to fall into a certain category for exemptions. Some of them are based off your classification, and that's where how you're classified is a huge part of this. I think most people would be shocked how their athletic training positions are actually qualified or classified in HR. We found when we went through some of our stuff years ago that classified as assistants, largely like an administrative assistant. And we're like, hold on, these people have an actual healthcare license. And they should be classified the same as like our clinical nursing staff or health center staff. And there was a lot of kind of misunderstandings, miscommunications. They didn't quite know our professional preparation. And so those qualifications and classifications absolutely matter. One of the kickouts that's a dead kickout is education. If you are a teacher, an educator, and at least 50% of your job description is at that teaching, educating threshold, that's an exemption. A lot of individuals right now who maybe they're at a university, maybe they're at a high school, and they're providing athletic training services and healthcare provision in that regard, and they're teaching maybe a quarter of the time or a third of the time. Literally this summer into this fall, I've had lots of peers and friends where they've said reissued with a 50% threshold of teaching. That gave the employer an exemption so they wouldn't have to pay them overtime. I was stationed between the employer, but some people was not. I was just handed to them saying, I'll take it or leave it. Have to answer, increase the salary, exempt from the overtime. You're over the threshold. Some highly compensated employees over that, they'll be salaried and it won't matter. My current position, I'm a full-time faculty member. I have full professor status, and I get paid out of the academic pot. So we have rank, assistant, associate, full professor. Well, we're well over the thresholds of this, so it doesn't matter to me. Now, I choose to be an athletic trainer and work with teams, but because of my educational exemption and threshold salary, it doesn't matter to me. It does not impact me. I have no right to say anything hours I work. And we have all of our athletic trainers, or most all of them, they have a 50% threshold on their contract. And so our head athletic trainer, our associate head athletic trainer, our first assistant, they all have that 50% threshold. They're not part of this conversation because they have at least 50% of their teaching. So it's a kick out. They already have that exemption. They can work as many hours a week as necessary to do the job.
So now those that do have that 50% threshold, how is that actually calculated for those that, let's say, do work with a team, are sitting under that price point, that 47,000 or that 47 and some change thousand? And how would they calculate that as if they were assigned that, hey, you are now going to be a 50% faculty member in the education show so that basically you are in this exemption? How does that affect them, and how does that get actually calculated in what they truly do? Because is that something that just through their HR department, they have to sign and say, all right, you are technically called as 50%, or is this actual time that they then are supposed to calculate out from time spent with their athletes to time spent in their classroom or educational preparing for classroom?
One of the biggest things I've talked about with this FSLA law in multiple conferences that I've presented at is the job classification, that there's actually a contract on file in the Human Resources Department. It's something that's discussed, it's approved, it's signed by the appropriate individuals, articulates what the job responsibilities are. It's not one of these, and here, literally have a big problem. I almost despise when I see job descriptions that say, as determined by the head athletic trainer. It's not appropriate, because that means, well, hey, go do my laundry. No, this is a healthcare professional. If you're hiring him for a specific job, articulate the job to this team, season or time, so that they can actually part of them and be able to organize their day and time manage and plan. 50% threshold, what does that do to their classification? Are they considered a faculty member? Are they considered adjunct faculty? Time staff that then have an adjunct faculty job? I know our faculty members that are also athletic trainers, they are considered traditional faculty members. They have voting rights as a faculty member. They have a say in our faculty forums and decisions, even though that you could argue more than half of their job is athletic training, but because they have that 50% threshold to teach, faculty member. And so that's an HR, that's a job classification thing. There are a lot of ATs right now that are getting this 50% requirement to teach, having to piecemeal out these classes whenever they can fit it in around their athletic schedule. They have treatments, rehabilitation, coverage outside of a traditional afternoon practice time or evening practice event time. If it happens during the day during a class, they've got a major conflict. I think the job classification, to answer your question, is the most important part, objectively, accurately defining their duties, responsibilities, tasks, and authority level of their job. And what I've found is that in athletic training, especially at the high school and collegiate level, have actual job descriptions. There's nothing on file in HR. Which to me is alarming. It's a common practice throughout most any other profession, and yet it does not exist.
So that's basically something, as the athletic trainer and as the individual that is worried about this, we need to be going to either our direct supervisor and telling them we need to find out what our job classification is in HR, or going to that HR and determining what are we classified as? What do you have us in? Are we in that administrative assistant role, or are we actually a medical healthcare provider?
Yes, absolutely. David Perrin, he wrote an article back in 2007 and published it in Quest. And it was called Athletic Training from Physical Education to Allied Health. And it was kind of this current climate of athletic training got its roots in physical education. And I'm not disregarding that. We needed that credibility at the time to kind of get our feet wet as a professional. We're a young profession. 1950 is when we initiated it all. That's still relatively young when you consider peer professions like nursing and physical therapy. We're quite a bit younger than them. So we needed that kind of kickstart in physical education. But we have left that. We have AMA recognition. We have a national board exam. We have state credentialing in every state except for California. And so we have these trajectories that have far outpaced the PE model, yet are hanging on to that PE model with a death grip. And they're trying to maintain this classification as a staff member. I've seen, I cannot tell you how many athletic departments at the collegiate level that their athletic trainers are listed as athletics staff. Has nothing to do with a healthcare license, nothing to do with healthcare provision. You might as well be an assistant coach or the sports information director or a manager. That's how they're classified, because they can control the salary and the job descriptions that way fairly easily when it's not in a healthcare paradigm.
And now that is where the August 1st, 2016 legislation came in, correct?
Yes.
For colleges, putting them under a model. Am I correct?
Yes. And that's, I've found that's going to be a very hard pill to swallow for a lot of people.
And how exactly does that change the dynamic of the sports medicine, the athletic training room, that type of stuff?
Well, I can give you examples. Our athletic training room is not the athletic training room. It's the athletic training clinic. Most physicians, most healthcare providers don't provide services in a room. They do it in a clinical setting. And so for us, that was changing signage to start the actual terminology and nomenclature. Hey, meet me in the clinic for treatment. But that also means that we're going to treat it like a clinic. It's going to be a healthcare facility. It's going to be stocked and cleaned and organized and structured to be a clinic. And that might mean you have to up your technology, where now you're using, whether you like it or not. I'm a tree killer. I like paper. I like to write things down on paper. But we have an EMR system, and we document things that way. And we provide peripheral devices to our staff with iPads and things like that to do EMR. That's a change. Now, some of those are pretty easily implemented. But the medical model and going to where they're under or housed in a medical format is really hard, because I find it to be a control issue, because you're taking a sports medicine staff, licensed healthcare providers, registered certified healthcare providers, and then telling the people that had oversight over them, athletic administrators, that they're actually going to be housed in a different department now. And so there is a control issue. Now, to me, all it is changing the conversation and adding another piece to the puzzle. So if I'm under a physician in the health center, the athletic director should absolutely be part of our meeting so we can have a conversation. It's just that I don't report to the AD, I work with the AD. I don't report to the coach, I work with the coach. Some people have a really hard time with that. I don't know why that power control would be such an issue. When you talk about people that have like goals, they want to compete, they want to be successful, they want to be injury free, and they want to win. That is kind of the goal with our, as far as our approach with patient care, patient outcomes. But yet it comes back to, well, now we're gonna have to pay you more. Well, these are healthcare providers. They're not a manager or an SID. These are people with advanced degree sets.
So basically that is where we've come from, the old model of a head football athletic trainer being fired because they didn't like the head coach, didn't like the decision that has been made. And that's something that the NCAA has now put in.
Yep. And that's where I had this conversation with a coach years ago, that if I make a healthcare decision for a athlete, my patient population, and they don't like that, that is my decision under the supervision of a physician. Just the same as I don't have to like the plays they call or the decisions they make during gameplay, but that's not my decision to question that or to compromise that. That's not what I'm employed for. So for a coach to actually try to leapfrog or a trump a healthcare decision, that's outside their job scope. And I also believe that's leadership. The athletic director should not allow that to happen, to say, no, your job is to coach and to provide mentorship and leadership for that athletic team, not to make healthcare decisions. The head coach and that athletic trainer work together to create a synergy for success, not for one to trump the other.
I think that was somewhat shown really well. If you watched ESPN right after, I think it was week two or – or whatnot, Bill Belichick pulled the sports medicine staff does the surgeries. I don't do the surgeries, but the sports medicine staff does not call the plays. I put my trust in them. So if somebody as high ranking as Bill Belichick can put that trust in into his staff, why wouldn't college coaches be able to do the same?
I think we do have a professional credibility and standing issue in athletic training. There are some ATs out there that you could argue don't bring themselves to the table as professionals day in, day out. I mean, think about this. Other healthcare professionals, they will accept certain things and will not accept others. And ATs, we have largely accepted some roles that are not part of our professional training, our preparation. When you talk about scheduling hotels, no, that is not part of the role delineation study for the BOC. It's not even part of a business plan or any of the standards that you were taught. But yet ATs, that's part of their job for some of these teams. Because of that, and that trickle effect of those things just getting lumped onto your plate, you have lots of individuals that have just accepted, well, that's part of my job, and it doesn't uphold this professional athletic trainer as a healthcare provider status. I'm not saying that every situation is black and white, because there is a lot of gray. It's not a perfect scenario in every situation. Things that should be non-negotiables for us as professionals that we will do within our scope of our position or not do and be able to say no. And I think it's still been a persisting issue at certain levels of athletic training and settings.
So basically that right there is where in our education and what we take in our BOC certification, that's kind of where we fall into that learned professional exemption.
Absolutely, because it's a non-negotiable. We have to come from an Acadie-credited program. Right now, it's at the undergraduate level. It will, in the few years to come, it will become only at the master's degree level. Have to graduate from that program, have to pass the BOC examination, and secure state credentialing. Now, obviously, we have California with no state credentialing required other than certification, and Texas where you can be licensed and not have to be certified. So those are two outliers or exceptions that I believe need to be fixed or at least addressed, but they're not insurmountable. They're absolutely not. If that's what's required for entry-level practice, then that puts you in a learned category because there is no other way to do that. This is not a weekend course. This is not a side certification you can get in a little seminar or online. You have to go through an academic program and meet certain standards and thresholds to sit for these exams and to secure certain regulation that enables you to practice in each state.
So now that's where we fall under, and that's where our educational exemption comes. What does that mean for us? I guess if we don't teach, if we don't have that sit under that 50%, because that's probably a lot of people. What does that, I guess, mean for the athletic training profession? What do we have to do? How do we have to go and make sure that we're taken care of? And how do we make sure that, I guess, we are exempt and that we are, this should affect us and our job?
Okay. Some of the recommendations I've given across the board. Number one, don't start an argument. Start a conversation. Meet with your current supervisor and talk about these federal law changes are coming. They're supposed to be implemented by December 1st. I believe that date will be bumped because of it's an election year and it'll probably get postponed because there's a lot of pushback on this right now. Okay, start the conversation. Most people, their contractual year is a fiscal year reset. And so they have that June 30th, July 1. Start a conversation about what does your current job description look like? Where are you currently classified? And are those things appropriate for what you do? This is not an opinion. This is a law. And so this is where some people have to get past their own personal bias and go with, this is what currently is happening across the United States. There are plenty of examples and precedents set for how this is being done well. But we do have to have that conversation about going to HR and finding out how these ATs are classified. This is your job. You are hiding or trying to do behind your supervisor's back. This is your job. Like, you have every right to go ask that question. And like I've said before, you might be shocked by what you find or don't find in HR. So then again, it's the conversation. If you find that it's not classified well, there's not a current job description, then start doing it. Look for examples. Benchmark with similar institutions or within a conference and find out who's doing it well and who's not, and get up to speed with that classification and job description. You might have to reclassify people. You might have to redo their job descriptions. It may come to that. You might want to find out, why aren't you being reviewed on a regular basis? If you are reviewed, is that review tied to a promotion, demotion, retention? Those things should matter in the scheme of a job description. So I would tell people to start looking at that immediately. From the value model, I do this now. I use the app Toggle. Track your hours. How many ATs punch a clock or track their hours each and every day? Objectively, I could tell you right now, put together an Excel sheet for all of last year, and you could type it all out and say, well, there's the hours I worked. Well, that has a digital signature that you created today, saved it today, and it's never been edited at any other time. But if you use things like Toggle or other apps or certain type of technology tracking, you could show, hey, listen, this last year for my 12-month contract, I averaged 73 hours a week. You're getting your time out of me. I'm working. But a lot of ATs don't track that. What we do is we complain about the hours, but no one has an actual triangulation mechanism to demonstrate it happened.
Christian? All right. Let me jump in real quick.
Go
there.
Ahead. Go ahead.
With the hours, Bill and I have been doing that, but recently I've had the conversation because we're attempting to get middle school athletic trainers, or at least athletic trainer care for our middle school athletes. And you know, I was like, well, hey, everybody keep track of your time. But someone was telling me it really, they don't care about the time. The administrators here don't care about the hours because everybody works hours, but they said they care about the liability. And so can you justify that with kind of what you just said?
I believe with this new law, they'll care about the hours. Because if someone's going over 40 hours a week and they're not making that 9-13 threshold and they have to start paying overtime, they're going to start caring about those hours real fast.
Well,
the liability piece is based off of, well, we need boots on the ground to basically cover ourselves that we can say we have someone on site providing care.
Well, we're here at Pasadena ISD. We're well above the threshold. Like I said, I'm in my 13th year as a teacher athletic trainer, and I'm close to $70,000. So, you know, I'm obviously above the $48,000 that's required. So that's
sure.
Not the big thing, but I was just trying to make sure we understand it's not just about the hours, but maybe you're about to get to that too as well. So
what, one thing about the hours that I kind of ask, because going off of what Jeremy's saying, is I guess how are schools approaching this? What do you see? I know, like here at Rice, so that's something that I've actually implemented with our guys, our staff, especially our interns that we have around here, because we've been luckily, like we were talking about before, is that we're lucky enough that we're kind of getting on we got on the bus a little early. There was people that, like I told you, came back from the CATS conference that I know in the college setting that they go, I didn't even know that this was happening. We had no idea that this was going on. Luckily here at Rice, you know, we've got some great people that have actually been working on this. One of our associates on the Olympic sports side, he has been in this every single day and digging. And what I know what we're doing at Rice, where there's potential for some people to be jumped up. There's potential for some people to be moved to hourly. What are schools doing and how is that going to affect, I guess, our profession and what we do and how everybody falls in? Because we set up a timer ourselves. We went with the work time. It's on the iPhones. I had every one of my guys, and every one of my guys has been going through their hours for the month, just because those that are in an intern position, even those that are full-time assistants, what are they hitting? Just because if we do have to go into this in December, what are we going to do? How many hours are they working, just so that we can see an overview? Some of us are working 95 hours a week, which, I mean, obviously any athletic trainer can probably understand. But what are schools doing with those hourly? Are they going to be moving some people to hourly?
I've seen an example, a local university, I shouldn't say local, but in the state of Indiana, they have 5 ATCs. They range from $30,000 to $40,000 with their salaries. None of them meet that threshold of the 9-13 a week. Their current for this academic year are now down to 3 ATCs that are all getting paid over $50,000. So you had 5 people making $30,000, $40,000, which comes out to about $150,000 for all their salaries. Now you've reduced your staff to 3. Hasn't changed the bottom line. They're still making $150,000 or whatever, but you've got less people to do the work. And so they met the threshold. They got over the 9-13 a week or 47 grand a year, but everyone else got more responsibility and they still meet the law. I've seen other ones where they absolutely have started to split hairs on hours, where they can say, okay, you don't work over Christmas break because you don't have a winter sport. So we're taking those weeks away from you. You don't work spring break because you don't have that sport. So we're taking that week away from you. And they started to look at actual hours and work weeks, to where instead of it being a 12-month contract with every week of that 12 months, they're saying you only work about 40 weeks a year. Of our current staff members work 44 weeks of the year. They have a 10-month contract. Because it's on file in HR, it's clearly specified that the months of June and July are their months. We cannot require them to do anything. They can go in the witness protection program for all we care. For those 44 weeks, they have to make that 913 a week, which puts them right around $40,000 and change. So our two people, we just hired them this summer. We hired them at 41 grand a pop. They're the lowest level staff members we have, but they meet that threshold by the FSLA, and they can work as many hours as they need to because they're over that threshold of the 913 a week. And they have those 2 months. That's also where you could say you could get another job during those 2 months or just have mental health time. But we don't have to meet that 47,000. People get hung up on that 12-month contract number, but it's based off what you work. Other ones I've seen where because they took out spring break or Christmas break or an Easter break, whatever it is, they say you only work 36 weeks a year. And so they base that 913 off the 36 weeks and pay them accordingly. So that 47 is kind of misleading. It's really that 913 a week. What I've seen is that either good or bad, they've adjusted the actual job description and contract to specifically specify the weeks of work. Because that's where if you only work 36 weeks a year, 40 weeks a year, they don't care if you work 90 hours a week. As long as they pay you that threshold for the week, then they'll be above the FSLA law and they'll be fine. And they'll say you can sleep when you're not working, when you're away from your job. Now, the 12-month people, that changes everything.
So now, Sean, let me jump in there for a second.
Yeah.
To go back to earlier, you were talking about job classifications. Last year, I had a podcast with Josh Ellen. We were talking about the whether or not it's okay for students to do taping and that kind of thing. And for that podcast, I actually did a lot of research and I went and got my teacher contract and I got my athletic training job description. And just looking, because I asked everybody in the district, all of our athletic trainers, which there's 11 of us, and none of them had the job description. None of them had the teacher contract. And so I had to go to HR and those kind of things to get those sent over to me and read through those things and look through. And so it is absolutely not normal for us to not fully understand what our job description is. But like you were saying, that needs to change. We need to understand that. We need to start there with that conversation. Well, let me find out what I'm actually supposed to be doing and then go from there and then say, okay, well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm doing none of it. Let's either fix that or change it. So I'm definitely there with you, as most of us don't fully have a clear definition of what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, and I applaud you for doing that, that you would initiate the conversation, go to HR, get a hold of those contracts, and then to come together and say, you're right, we're not doing what we're hired to do or on paper to do. Maybe it just needs updated. I know when my first job was at a high school, and they had not touched that contract or classification for 15 years prior to me getting there. And so I just met with the superintendent and the school principal and athletic director and said, let's have a conversation. Let's redo this and get it at least up to snuff. Currently had nothing to do. It had nothing in there about Ohio licensure, anything. Got it up and then put a mechanism in place where they would get an email generated reminder that every couple years or every year, you should at least look at this to update it, not let it sit and become ancient history.
So when you say those, that I guess your hours that you now have with your student athletes, us here, it's going to take away the amount that we can do with them. But I guess what should be the expectation on those that move up? Is there going to be a change? Those that they do give the 47 or the 913 a week, and what's going to be the exception or expectation on those that are moved to hourly? What should the hourly goal be to make per hour? What is there anything that, I guess, is there a standard that we should follow there?
Okay. You're getting Adam's opinion here, so tread lightly. Just because this law has changed does not mean that you're getting a promotion. Your job hasn't changed. The expectation from the federal government through institutions and corporate entities is that you pay your people for what they're doing. So this is not a promotion. I do not believe there would be a new expectation of someone who, oh, well, we just bumped you up $10,000 to become compliant with the FSLA. What else are you going to do? No, there's more you're going to do, if I'm understanding you correctly. You're going to keep doing an excellent job at what you do. It's just now that they updated a very dated law, and you're going to be paid comparably to current standards, current cost of living, inflation. There's not more expectations. If you put someone and they are going to hourly, well, if your employer chooses to cut your hours so they don't have to pay you as much overtime, they're choosing to cut your hours. You can tell that with a straight face and with peace and sleep well at night to your coaches, to your athletic administrators. HR is cutting my hours because they don't want to pay me overtime. Done wrong or made a decision here, they've done it to limit the actual cost and production that you've been giving all these years for a very small price or for free. If someone has their job description realigned and hours cut, or they limit their travel with teams and things like that, that is an institutional or a corporate decision. That is not your decision. There is nothing that athletic trainers have done to ask for this or promote this. This is coming down federally because they saw this is not appropriate and it's not keeping pace with our current economy.
So
I'd be very careful about anyone that would say, oh, well, you just got more money. What are you going to do in addition? That is a narrative that's as false as it gets.
Especially in the college setting, I think that a lot of places that I've heard have said that. They've said, well, we're going to give 3 or 4 of our staff members full time, and then we're going to go ahead and say the rest of them are all hourly. We'll limit them to 40 hours a week, and then during season potentially jump up to 50 or something. What's a good way to bring up that in conversation? That now, let's say me in my position, I'm below that threshold. I'm going to be bumped up and kept at my main responsibilities that I have, but those that, you know, don't have that amount of responsibilities that are even sitting lower under me are bumped up to that same level, and then we're cut on how many hours that, let's say, our interns or certain staff are able to be there. But now all of that stuff is then falling back on me. How do we approach that as full-time staff? How do we approach that as some of those more senior level staff, or even as those lower level staff that are saying, hey, I've only got 40 hours, so see ya.
And please correct me if I'm hearing you wrong. You're saying that if you have 3 people that are salaried, they bump them up above that threshold and they salary them, and they said, okay, you are at the salaried level, we won't have to pay you overtime, you have the exemption because of your salary. 3 junior staff members that are hourly, they're limited to 40 hours a week, and yet there's still work to be done, and it's going to fall to somebody.
Correct.
That's correct what you're saying? All right.
Yes, sir.
What I go back to then is that job classification and job description. If on file in HR, your job description is specific to Rice University football and encompassing their care and those type of things, if they start to say, well, then you have to pick up the slack for these other things, that is outside your job description. It's not part of what you're paid to do. Do that new contract. That's a different contract. And it's not to be, you're not just thumbing your nose at them and like, oh, I'm not going to do this. No, it's if you have a contract that's specifically designated for Rice football to accommodate their healthcare needs in season, out of season, preseason, all of that, then anything else is above and beyond that contract. What I find in athletic training is this, like I said before at the beginning of our podcast, this other duties as assigned. That's not a job description. That's kind of a however you're feeling in the moment. You can have that let's all pitch in approach, but what will happen is that you end up getting kind of parceled out to all these different job descriptions that aren't yours. The problem with that is when your actual job that you're hired starts suffering because of that. You're tired, or you have 2 things going on at the exact same time in 2 different locations, and they're making you pick one versus the other based off incident of injury or high risk. That's not appropriate. So that's where I'd go back to, if they say these 3 senior people are going salaried, specifically identify their job responsibilities. I think what they'll find is when then they limit the hours of the 3 junior staff members, they're going to find they need some other people. They might need some interns. They might need a graduate assistant. They might need to look for other ways to provide the same services, because you're only one person who at all. And just because you got salary doesn't mean now you have to do it for everybody else. Now you're doing multiple jobs.
So for those junior level employees, what should a minimum look like for them? What should they be asking, or what should they be receiving? Is there a standard for that per hour, I guess?
I lost you there. It hung for a second.
Okay. Sorry about that. If for those like junior level employees, those staff members, Is there a minimum that they should look for? Is there a set standard for them that, hey, this is what you got to be receiving per hour that you should be receiving as an employee, as a BOC certified athletic trainer?
I think the salary survey talks a little bit to that. The thing I'd go back to keep in mind, that even with this update that the FSLA is proposing and has deadlines, it's still only at the 40th percentile of full-time salaried or workers across the United States. So to me, if you're requiring someone to have BOC certification, state credentialing, a master's degree, I believe that salary should be above the 40 threshold, especially when you're asking him to do so many hours per week. I don't think that's unreasonable. I think the hard sell is that we've gotten so used to some of these salaries by the old standards of being in the 20s, mid-20s, high-20s, low-30s, yet you're asking for people to have credentialing that far outpaces that salary, especially when you're talking about a healthcare license, regulation, registration, certification, depending on which state you're in. I believe there's certain thresholds. Now, obviously, if they're hourly and they don't want to pay them overtime, again, I think that that 40 grand threshold in the year 2016 is more than appropriate. And you know what? I should probably caveat that with, depending on where you live in the United States, even that's not acceptable. In California, you largely can't work for that. You can't live for that because of the cost of living. But here in Indiana, that goes a long way. So, I mean, that you look at comparable professions, that's where we get into a real muddy area because of what people make as entry-level salaries in athletic training compared to our like peers in OT or PT or nursing. They'll dwarf us by 20, 30 grand easily in a lot of categories and have less hours. And I'm not trying.
I think we fall a lot in that Houston area with at least the staff members that I know, those that work in our settings are very similar. It's obviously not the California, but it's also not the Midwest where I grew up, went to school, things like that, where you could live off of a pretty low salary. Where down here, that's not the case. So.
Yep. Yeah, I think that you have to look geographically where you're at. Cost of living and things like that. I find one of the biggest indicators that I found state by state, what is the poverty level? What do they classify as poverty in that state? And then you start looking at, okay, then what should someone who has a bachelor's and master's degree with experience and a state license be making compared to that poverty level? And when you see the threshold is like a $10,000 difference from what the salary is, that's just not acceptable. Why go to school? Why get these things? And I argue that ATs should then just say no. When they're offered that, to just say that's insulting and no. I think things would change if you had this anarchist approach of everyone just said no to these jobs and they were going without full-time staff. Things would change real quick. But we're a very passionate, dedicated profession. We love what we do. We want to invest in these student athletes' lives. And so you have people that will say, okay, well, I want this job. I need to build some experience. And so they'll get into it and might take a lower salary to kind of get their feet wet when they're young.
So I guess the biggest thing is we need to approach our HR and we need to see how we're set up there and what we're classified as and where our classification is, whether we are in teaching, whether we are, what our job description is, and like Jeremy did, go back and see what's done, and kind of like you said when you were at that high school position, change the things that need to be changed. So I guess are there any outliers? Are there any other things that we should look for over the next few months as our jobs, as our places of employment try and implement this and or it gets talked about and or any resources that we can utilize to kind of back what we're going off of?
Adam, you still there?
I think he might have got cut off.
All right, so since we're kind of in the middle, I'm sure Adam's going to call back in here in just a second, I'll try and add him back in. But this episode, it will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/FLSA for the Fair Labor Standards Act. Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/FLSA, and it'll also have links to the resources that Adam has included. It'll have a link to this PowerPoint that he was kind of working through before we had some of our technical difficulties. And then it'll have ways to get a hold of me and Adam and Sean all the same. So I'm going to jump over there and see if I can call him back. If I can, then we'll kind of finish the conversation. If I can't, then we'll finish the conversation as well. So hang on. All right, we're going to have to go with it from there. I know he was breaking up kind of in and out. John Seiko watching live. I know he said he took this as a great opportunity to revise his job description, but the admin came to him just before he was just beginning working on it, and they actually revised his. And once the new deadline hits, then he will be above the threshold, which he currently is below, but he'll be bumped up then. So looks like Adam has kind of jumped back in the call there. So Adam, can you hear us?
I can. I said a call error and I dropped me, so I wasn't sure what was going on.
All right. Well, I don't know what happened either, but we were just talking about John. He's in Bloomfield, Illinois. I think it's Illinois. I forget because I'm not from that area.
Bloomington?
Bloomington, Bloomfield. There's a
maybe
the Bloom. I think it's Bloomfield Bucks. John, I know you're listening. He's been on the podcast. Is a minor league soccer team that he works with. Anyways,
okay.
So he said he was just recently reclassified from non-professional to professional due to the state licensure and qualifications that were recognized in his district. And so, Adam, can you go back over those terms again? The professional or versus non-professional. Why was he non-professional before and is professional now?
Well, he should never have been not non-professional before, because he absolutely was trained and educated as a professional. I'm not sure why. Initially, he was not classified that way, but that goes back to this classification conversation. I'm glad that they recognized the update and were able to reclassify him. Believe that he should have been classified prior to that change as a learned professional, to where he was in that category. The categories, I mean, they're kind of executive, administrative, professional, learned, and professional computer. But we've as ATs, ever since the BOC exam and state credentialing, we have always fallen into the professional learned category because our preparation requires a bachelor's degree, at least since 2004, if an accredited model changed. To have a bachelor's degree, and we have to pass a BOC exam and gain state credentialing. And I know in Texas you don't have to pass the certification exam, but you still have to have that bachelor's degree, but even take the licensure exam.
Gotcha. So he did chime in. He has been watching. So it's Bloomfield, Michigan. I knew that. I knew Illinois didn't sound right, but for some reason. Anyways, so it's Bloomfield, Michigan. So that's where John is. But thanks for clarifying the professional versus non-professional. And then, you know, that is one of the questions with, it's not really an argument anymore. It's done. We're going to the Masters of Athletic Training, you know, the entry-level master's program. We're not arguing about that. I'm not saying anything like that. But I think in your PowerPoint, one of the points was that the education, the having the master's level, it also affects whether or not we're at the threshold or not, correct?
It's definitely something that the Katie has looked at, where a lot of like peers have moved to the graduate level for professional entry into their professions. The exception is nursing. Nursing has absolutely stayed at the baccalaureate level to where you can get your professional credential at that level. But most like peers have jumped to a graduate level. And that was one of the rationale to move our professional preparation to the master's level, which was to up our professional credibility among our constituents, that you now go to AT school. You went to PT school or OT school or PA for physician assistant. Now when the requirement shifts, you'll go to AT school. That'll be the only way to become a certified athletic trainer is through a graduate program. Whether it's a 3+2, a 4+1, or however creative you want to be, you have to go to a professional program at the bachelor or at the master's level.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're good. All right, so let's kind of bring this back around, sum it all up. Sean, why don't you tell me kind of some of the things that you've gathered from this presentation, some of the things that have helped you learn, and how you're going to move forward starting today with job classifications. Sean, you get me? Hello? All right. Hey, Sean, can you hear me?
Adam, Jeremy.
I can hear you, but you're breaking up.
All right. Lots of fun technical difficulties. I did about a dozen test calls, making sure everything was working, and everything was working fine. But whenever it's time to press play, all heck breaks loose. That's okay. All right. So Fair Labor Standards Act. So coming December 1st, which Adam thinks may be postponed due to the election year and all the pushback that's being received, is when people will either be bumped up to making the minimum $48,000, or you said the is it 455 a week, Adam?
That was the old threshold. It's now 913 a week.
Is now
so
nine...
whatever your weekly accrual is for the year, I'm on a current 10-month contract, and so whatever that 10 months is, I would have to meet that threshold of 913 a week for those 10 months.
All right. So if you're not at that level, and again, that's gross pay, correct?
Yes. It just means that they would have to pay you overtime. You would not qualify for the exemption.
Okay. And then there's a lot of confusion about the exemptions. So the best place to look to see if you qualify or if you're exempt from being bumped in the threshold is where, Adam?
I've provided some references. There's a couple from the ones from the NATA, ones from the NCAA, and a couple are from the Department of Labor, which are online and they're updated all the time. But it just talks about what would qualify you as being exempt. There's a threshold of these exemptions where as long as you have that exemption, they can work you as many hours as they want, not pay you overtime. If you don't meet that exemption, you are absolutely due overtime in your job. But they're on the PowerPoint provided. But I know that the NATA, if you go under advocacy and regulatory aspects on the NATA's website, you'll find that document where it talks about the Department of Labor proposed salary and overtime projections.
All right. So, yep, I got those links to those in the show notes. Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/FLSA once it releases. This is also the links are on the show notes. The PowerPoint I have in Google Docs, so I can share that out so people can scroll through it there. All right, now we were just discussing if someone is exempt or not. And then the best tips that you gave for getting changes is, one, just ask a question. Don't start an argument, but start a conversation. So, hey, again, you know, athletic director, we're not necessarily under the medical model here, but so I go to my athletic director. Hey, I'm just curious, what is my job description? Can you give me a printed off version of my job description? And then from there, you read it, figure out, hey, this doesn't fit or this does fit, or this needs to be updated a little bit, right?
I think we might have lost him, Jeremy, again.
All right, so we lost Adam now, but I got you back. All right, so...
From the biggest thing of what I hear from him is we just need to talk about it. We need to make it known, and like you said, not make an argument and just chat. Just have a sit down and kind of say, hey, this is where we are as a profession are going. Not approach it as we're trying to get somebody in trouble or we're trying to bring in a lawyer and labor laws against our employer, but make a lot of things known. I know I've looked at the a lot of the Department of Labor stuff as well as the stuff off of NATA, and there's a lot of good information there, and it shows a lot. And it explains all of this stuff that kind of he went through, and especially is in his PowerPoint here, and talks about how that affects different professionals and especially us as athletic trainers.
So with Nyelen is coming here, you know, we've talked a lot about don't be that guy that just always picks a fight. You know, young in your career, guys tend to want to show that they're the boss and they have credentials and this kind of stuff. But as you learn a little bit, people tend to understand, hey, what is it? Sugar gets a lot more bees than salt or something like that. I don't know. So if you just start a conversation, then that's where you go from. Start the conversation, do the research, find out your job description, move on from there. And then if you're not at that level, so Sean, last time we discussed, you're currently under the threshold. So how do you see this playing out for you?
Correct. I am. And as we've been talking with our university, I know that our athletics department has talked with our HR and us as a profession, some of our staff members have talked with our HR to see what is our job description and where are we at. And like I said, one of the other associates on campus, that is what they've been really working on hard. And we've been told that some of us are going to move up and some of us are going to be placed into more of an hourly position. I'm one of those that will be moved up. Most of our full-time staff, as I have heard, is probably going to be moved up. That's still in the works. So I don't want to jinx us and throw something out there that's not correct, but that's where the way it's looking. But for me, just kind of like Adam was saying, my worry is where are we going to get and what are we going to do? Because how much more is going to be put on me now? Because I think that a lot of athletics departments think that, well, if I'm going to have to give you a raise, I'm going to expect more out of you. And the same thing is going to come with all of our staff members. And as a upper level staff member in some of these positions, I think you have to kind of go back and kind of rethink where, all right, if I'm moving up and I'm not moving up equally above where I am in terms of a full-time staff member that is a lower level staff member that's also moving up to that $47,000 threshold or 913 a week threshold, what's going to be the what am I going to have to do? What are going to be the questions asked and what's going to be asked of me? And that's kind of where we're at right now. And we're still in the works and we're still in the talks. I know that. I've had a lot of questions for our athletics department. We've had some meetings and we've sat down and I've been the probably the guy that's a little bit of a thorn because I'm always asking questions. So
good for you.
All right, Sean, just curious, what would you be getting paid hourly? Because if I work a tournament here, if I work a contract job, it's like at least $30 an hour. I won't work if it's less than $30. So if you were to be 95 hours a week, like you said, you've been doing some, that's 55 hours at $45 an hour. To me, that seems like you'd be making more than if you were on a salary. Have you done any of that?
Well, me, I don't think that they will probably move me to hourly. I think I'll be placed I'll be put in that cap, like I said. But as it looks and as the understanding is what they're going to do is they're going to take our staff members that we have there and potentially take their hours, break down their paycheck that they have, be that X amount of dollars, and over a 40-hour week, pay them that per hour. Whether that comes out to $12 an hour or whatever it comes out to, that's probably very underpaid for what they should be getting. But then after that, they will receive, after that 40 hours, they will receive time and a half and on top of that. So let's say 25,000, you're going to like 12 something an hour for your employee. And then once they get down to, or once they hit that 40 mark, they're up to the 18 something. So it's not what we need. And that was kind of one of my questions. And what should we be looking at? Hey, you know, I've heard 25 an hour. I've heard 30 an hour. But when you start getting into that, your math of how many hours they can actually work before they might as well just move them to a full-time 913 a week person changes. And why aren't they just moving everybody? But it's that misunderstanding, the lack of understanding of what is done that is, I think, out there.
Sean, this is Adam. Is there not a set rate for anything that you are doing? I know that Jeremy was saying where he won't take less than 30. And Jeremy, you feel free to jump in on this as well. Is that something that you created or that the school system has for either one of you as far as a threshold for camps or things outside of your job description that you're paid per hour?
I'll start. For me, it's personal because, I mean, I'll see in Houston, most of the time you see that stuff coming from Bob Marley, it's $30 an hour. But sometimes it's 20, and usually if it's less than 30, he says, you know, I'm just the messenger. Don't kill me kind of thing, because that's kind of what's expected here in the greater Houston area. But I've seen some $35 and $40 an hour. And so anything I do outside of it has nothing to do with, you know, that's purely contract side jobs. And so it's nothing to do with the school. So anything I do with the school, if we're working tournaments here or over Christmas break, any of that stuff, it's all just included in my salary plus stipend plus days.
Okay.
So personal threshold for $30 an hour.
I know they've done something at our university where if it's camps with our own athletes, it's a certain pay rate. If it's camps outside of our athletes or patient population, they'll have a different rate. But that 25 to 30 is pretty regular for a threshold for RATs to get paid as well.
That's where I've been a little bit confused personally, because we do have somewhat of a standard. I know in this past year on our Olympic side, they said that anybody that wants a full-time staff member, it's going to be 25 an hour, which, yes, is that lower side of things. They might have actually even said 30 an hour this year, because I know that the year before was 25 an hour. And that expectation has kind of been set and normal. And some of the teams actually pay better. Football, we kind of said the same thing. And then we ran into an issue this year where we got kind of cut on that price, and they were paying around $15 an hour. So that standard, I think, has been somewhat set, but I don't know if it's been fully approached and fully set into stone, because that's where I've gotten confused on from my higher ups. Hey, this is what we had agreed on. Why is this not the standard? And that's where I think that standard should be, where we follow along with these hourly employees. And because that's kind of the standard across the country, is what do you make, what we're making, or what we should make an hour. And if not even more, I think there are some great resources around this part of the country that has said we should be making more than that. And there are a lot of PRN positions that are, but that's just where our athletics has stood. And when you're on kind of the lower level of, hey, I'm right in the middle of, I get the, what I'm hearing from up here, and I have to help these guys down here, I only get a certain amount of the information.
Yeah, one of the things I learned, I guess, just in the last couple of years, whenever I was a kid or whatever, I would I'll do that job, but then not know how much I was going to get paid. And so that's one of the things that I make clear. Like I said, Frio Hydration supports the podcast, but before I ever did that, I mean, Rob is a friend, and I said, look, I'm going to write this up because I want to be clear of our expectations beforehand. And if you don't meet these expectations, then I'm going to move on. If I don't meet these expectations, then you can move on. So just for me saying, hey, these are clearly my expectations written down, and, you know, kind of going back to the same thing we said earlier, Adam talked about his presentation, is having the clearly defined job description and classification. Because you say, look, this is clearly defining what I expect. And if I don't have this, then there's going to be an issue. And so rather than, yeah, like, coach, I'll work the camp, little coach, I'm going to work for this much. If you pay me less, I'm not going to be here for the second half of camp, right? Because that's what it is, right? Or I need to be paid cash at the end of the day to make sure that we're on the same page. Whatever, I don't know the best way legally and all that other stuff, but it's one of the lessons that I've had to learn, is to be clear up front.
And that's a thing I think personally we just need 100% buy-in and support from our staff members and from our those that are above us and those that are looking out for us. And if we have that, and those that do, it's great. But there are some that's it's not. You're not maybe getting that support, and that we need to find ways around so that we can answer those questions and set those standards.
Agree. Could not agree more.
All right, I think exhausted Sean's time. He's got to go trim his beard. It grows like
Hey, that's not going to happen. I do need to go take an athlete to the doctor, though, so I will probably be getting off here.
All right. Well, Sean, somebody wants to get a hold of you?
str3@rice.edu. I'm on Twitter at SeanReedy_ATC.
All right. Again, Reedy is spelled just like ready. It's pronounced Reedy, though. So SeanReedy_ATC. Adam, somebody wants to get a hold of you?
My name, Adam.Thompson, with a P for the Thompson, at INDWES.EDU. The INDWES is Indiana Wesleyan shortened. By far the best way to get a hold of me.
All right. And then his Twitter, like I said, he's a rock band guy from way back, Beastie Boys, Kid Rock, that kind of thing. So the Kid Ad as an addition, ADD, Rock. So you can hit him up there
if
that's easier for you. Of course, I'm on Twitter, Mr. Jeremy Jackson. So I'm Mr. Jeremy Jackson on Twitter or sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, which this episode will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/FLSA. Adam is a great resource, great way for you to check out, find out more about FLSA. So hit him up with your questions, and we'll go from there. So thanks for joining us on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. If you want to win a school health gift card, go to schoolhealth.com/SMB. So Adam, Sean, feel free to log in there, schoolhealth.com/SMB, register to win your gift card from School Health. And then if you're looking for water units, check out Frio Hydration. We're pretty pleased with ours so far, and the kids love to drink out of that one. So again, friohydration.com. For Jeremy Jackson, Adam Thompson out of Indiana Wesleyan University, Sean Reedy out of Rice University, that is a wrap.
How much time do we typically
have? Well, it kind of depends on you and Sean. So, okay. Sean, how much time you got?
I mean, I can go for probably a good hour at least.
Okay. Okay.
So I give me 1 second here, because I just had an athlete walk in and I need to make sure our door's locked.
All right.
What's up, buddy?
All right, Adam, your audio kind of was cutting in and out. So at some point, if it gets bad, then I'll just actually ask you to turn off your video, because sometimes, you know, that cuts down on half of the data that has to be sent. And so if it cuts out a lot, then you'll just turn off your video and we'll stick with the PowerPoint. You should still be able to see my
all right, I'm sorry about that.
Video, and then we'll go from there. So
at Cats, but I heard about it quite a bit. So several people were talking to me about it.
Ruin their social time. I was the last presentation of the day, and the questions, we probably had questions for 45 minutes.
Oh, I'm certain of it.
Yeah, there's some people that are in some really tough situations, and there are other ones that are in situations that can absolutely correct them being proactive. I think the deadline of December 1st is going to get bumped because of its election year. I don't know that that's going to be a hard and fast, but I believe by next fiscal year, moving from 16 to 17 in June and July, I mean, people need to absolutely be in their HR offices making changes. I've seen a lot of really great changes out there, and I've seen some shady stuff going on.
Most definitely. I know that luckily down here, we had started to kind of go over it, started to talk about it. But I know plenty of schools that when they came back from CATS, that was the first time that they had heard about it. And I was like, we're on the, at least, I guess, the one good thing about us is that we were on the plan of some sort of what are we going to do and how are we going to do this. But I mean, it's going to affect everybody, and especially us, who we utilize so many intern positions.
Yep.
And are in a smaller Division One that, you know, we don't have the money that a lot of the bigger Division Ones. Obviously, I mean, there's a lot of people in that same scenario, but we utilize that $25,000 cap as basically our intern position, and that's the position you're in for that year, 2 years, whatever that it might be. And they're working full time and stuff like that. And I mean, I understand it. I even fall underneath that cap. But we rely so much on those people and use so much of them and use so much of what they're doing for us that, like, we're going to run into if they determine that we're going to go hourly or we're going to go whatever. Our coverage, our medical coverage, what we can do here just feasibly is we're already looking at time and hours and stuff like that and what we have to do and change. But then it's something as simple as coming in on, we just built a brand new facility here for football. Mm-hmm. Just doing water swaps and stuff for our brand new pool units takes 8 hours to do.
Yeah.
With two people, you've run you've ruined half of your or a quarter of what you can do for the week, or depending upon how many hours you're doing. So I don't know. It's going to be a crazy situation, especially for those that do get bumped up that are going to have a lot more thrown down on them. So
yeah, there's I think that we've fallen kind of into a little bit. I mean, I don't want to say apathy, but that's probably what in a lot of cases where people have just accepted the status quo threshold used to be. And there's going to be a lot of people hang on to that for dear life. They're going to end up that for the year, and you can basically make someone exempt and not pay them overtime. That's going to be a really hard change. Like I said, I have lots of examples where I've seen it work well in other places where it's not going to work well at all, and people should either quit, move on, or there's going to be potentially lawsuits. I mean, you don't want to go against your employer with a labor attorney. But some places, the AD, who I would argue should not be their supervisor, should be someone through the health center, like a physician. They're telling them, "Oh, well, this doesn't affect you." And I'm like, "No, that's not accurate. This is a federal law." And they're getting attorneys, and it's getting ugly. And they're going to win. They're going to absolutely win these because, and you probably know. I mean, you're having a full-time workforce, really, significantly less, if not half less, with what they're probably doing with the. And universities have gotten used to it. They've absolutely gotten used to that workforce, and they expect it. They expect that level of service, and they don't want to have to pay for it. Obviously, like that, this is suggesting they would have to pay for it.
Yeah, we've ran into a lot of the problems where they keep telling us, "Hey, you need to do this. You need to do more. You need to add more." And we're on that where we're like, "You're wanting to add more, but now you're fixing to take away half of our workforce and pull our hours down and limit our hours and time and stuff like that. It's crazy what the athletics department doesn't understand about with the new laws coming in, that us not technically being under them and that we're untouchable from them, but yeah. They have to find the money for us to basically create our positions. Like, I know that we've looked into a few things, like some of the billing. I don't know if you guys up there are doing billing or anything like that. And I know there's a lot of schools around that are starting it, but our athletics department now said, hey, that's going to go into our general fund instead of feeding that into our budget to pay our staff. So we decided we're not going to even do any billing. We're not going to go for the ATS or anything like that that does any of that stuff. So
yeah, there's an institution here in Indiana that they did billing so well, institution came to expect a certain level of revenue as a source of funding every year. And so then they're like, but our first practice domain is prevention. And some years we have a better job. And instead of making 350 grand, we might make 100. And they were completely like, oh no, we can never be that low. It was like, it's feast or famine sometimes. Sometimes you have lots of injuries. Sometimes it's a great year and you don't. And so they did the same thing where they just backed off and said, well, we're not going to do this if the expectation is, hey, let's squeeze every single cent we can out of our athletes for reimbursement. And it became ugly. A really good thing, a good situation, became ugly from an administrator perspective of, no, we want that money.
No, we've
it's crazy.
We were worried about that as well. And that's kind of why we just kind of put that to it, because that's what they were going to ask from us and that wasn't going to feed into us and anything like that. So it's crazy how a lot of those situations have built and built up, and we're not getting anywhere with a lot of them. And especially now, like, our athletics department just came out and did and talked about that August 1st ruling on us not being under the AD and stuff like that. And I think a lot of coaches are going to be really not happy, as well as very thrown back at what is going to happen and what can potentially happen. So
now with that ruling, like, how was that communicated at your institution?
Well, I was talked to about it by our other associate on the Olympic sports side. He told me to involve our staff over here at football. As I understand, it was brought up by our head athletic trainer and him, our other associate athletic trainer, over at the coaches meeting this past week.
And is that something that's affecting other conference schools or just you guys?
I don't exactly know how it's going to affect us yet, to be quite honest with you, but it is going to, as of now, that's like I said, it's so new this week that they've just come out and talked to us about it that I don't know what's going to happen. So,
yeah, the medical model conversation it's a pressing one.
Yeah, most definitely. It's where we need to get to. So, yeah. But
well, I think the knee jerk reaction is they feel like they're going to lose care, when in essence you're probably going to improve care because lose control. At least that's what my perspective is that the coaching side, the athletic administrator side, they lose control over the athletic trainers because they really want to keep them from really having that credibility as a healthcare provider. They want them as athletic staff.
Yes.
So it's fighting tradition.
They want to be able to control what and how and when, instead of have somebody that's able to say over them something. So put a no to something. So no, I understand that.